Log Talk Radio.
Yes, blessed souls, we're coming out of Lion's Den to the promised land of our soul, where positive thought, speech, and action are potent catalysts and antecedents to activating universal redemption. Blessings and greetings, and blessings, blessed souls, we're alive because we're attempting to stay alive in the most existential moment, that's right now, connected to Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachem, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio. We humbly assert with a higher inner frequency. This is Soul Talk 776, Proverbs, Teachings to Access Wisdom and Righteousness, Part 1. Blessing upon the entire human family condition. With prayers and help, our next broadcast is taking place right now on June 26, 2022. It's now 11 a.m. live from Turtle Island, Eastern Standard Time, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization. Topic for discussion will be sharing the written oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. Our call-in number will be and is 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. We start off the show with the Lion's Den from a nice young man by the name of Levi Robin. And now let's bring in our co-host to begin the show. We have Rambam student, activist and teacher, and a person whose advice should be heeded to, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, Dennis.
Dobre utro, Don, and anybody from Rodina listening, previous. Yes.
Okay.
Let us
thank
begin.
God. In Russian, we say Slava Boga. We also have not the coolest, but the nicest dude in Brooklyn, who is also an ordained minister. We have Rob Walker, who is also a graphic t-shirt and graphic arts designer par excellence. Rob or Robert, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Don. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Okay, gentlemen, we'd like to start the show with actually, before we get into Proverbs, I want to share a book that Rob had a very interesting experience a couple weeks ago. He got this book, and the book is called The Gate of Trust, Shar B'Tachon, which was written by Rabbi Bachya Ibn Pakuda, who was a rabbinical scholar who lived in Espana, not Spain, but Espana, before Spain was called Espana over 1,000 years ago. And he is recognized as someone who was able to merit and prepare himself and purify himself to get the Ruach HaKodesh, the divine inspiration of the Creator. And I'd like to share, to get this as a preparation for the readings of King Solomon, because although Ben Obachia bin Kuda was a great sage and a great righteous person, he wasn't a prophet, and King Solomon was a prophet. So there's like another dimension. Maybe today or at a future program, we'll talk the difference between Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration, and the spirit of prophecy according to a Torah perspective. But I'd like to just share this with everyone, and we'll go to Dennis and Robert, and Robert and Dennis for feedback on this teaching. So Rabbeinu Bachya is also known as, or Bachaya, says, among the benefits of learning the scripture, which includes the oral Torah tradition, is tranquility of the soul, which means if a person is feeling tranquility of the soul, they shouldn't feel any worries. And just as a servant is bound up faithfully in his trust in his master, and we'll take this for getting feedback from Dennis and Robert, is for a person who does not place his trust in God, places his trust in another entity than God, and if a person places his trust in something other than God, then the Almighty, as an axiomatic consequence, removes divine providence from him and leaves him or her in the hands of an entity in which he placed his trust, let's say an idol or a belief system, like say that says one human being is better than another. So then a person could fall prey, measure for measure, someone who considers himself better than that person from their ideology will try to put them down, either financially, spiritually, emotionally. Dennis, your take on this teaching.
Well, it's similar to building a building. You don't build on sand. You build on hard earth that will hold the weight of the building up. That way you have trust in the building. So when we want to have trust, we want substantiability, and we want to be able to handle any problem that comes along. Not necessarily worry, because if you sit around and worry, that is the wrong thing to do. You must sit around and think of positive things so that when a problem does come up, you will take the positive side.
Beautiful. Robert, what is your take on these matters?
Well, you know, trust in the Lord, and he will order your steps, basically. You know, trust in the Lord with all your heart. I think that's a very profound way of looking at life as a whole. The people say, I trust God, but they trust God with conditions. They trust God to an extent. They trust God as long as they can physically see what they believe he is doing. And so when things don't look as they have prayed for it to look, or things don't look as if they think it should look, then their trust begins to diminish or dwindle, or it may even evaporate. It's like cotton candy in a mouth, right?
Right.
The Bible says walk by faith and not by sight, because your physical eyes and your spiritual eyes, you know, are in conflict constantly because of your physical and earthly desires and wants. And not really your needs, but your wants. I think your wants override your needs most times. And we are taught through social media and all types of, you know, constant bombardment of images that the world wants you to see to steer you away from the teaching of the Torah, from the Bible, from God, and hear what they are saying. You don't turn on a TV commercial and hear, well, God says buy a Toyota. Well, God says, you know, shop at ShopRite. You know, they're telling you what they want you to do. They're competing for your interest over God, and man's desires, A, to fit into society, and B, to get something quick, often leads them away from trusting God, and they try to do it themselves, only to realize that it won't work, and they have to come back to God in the end. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, gentlemen. With that being said, we're going to turn now to what is the essential presentation today, although that was pretty essential as well, to put one's trust in God. But I'd like to give it a little historical perspective because, you know, some people, they look at the five books of Moses and the prophets and the holy writings, and no one asks the question, well, what is the history behind the writing of these holy works? But I'd like to share with you a little perspective. This is in the preface. This was compiled by Rabbi Rosenberg. And he quoted sources from the oral Torah tradition, from what is known as the Midrash Mishlei, which is basically the deeper dimensions of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs in Hebrew is called Mishlei. And also Avot Rabbi Natan. That's King Solomon wrote three books that people primarily identify with him, or he had many writings that were not eventually published into the body of what is known as the Tanakh, the prophets of the holy writings. He wrote Proverbs, he wrote Ecclesiastes, and he wrote Songs of Songs. Now, believe it or not, despite the fact that he was such a popular king and reigned for such a long time, and the unique dimension of King Solomon's reign was that there was no war that entered the land of Israel, and even opposing armies or regimes didn't even go on the borders of Israel at that time, because his wisdom was so profound that there was no desire to start up with Israel. Not because Israel was a military might with the most high-tech weapons, but because once upon a time in human development, wisdom was a pursued activity. It was a matter that was hotter than the hottest 5G cell phone. And however, at the beginning, when King Solomon's books were written, they were regarded as parables and bereft of divine inspiration, were put aside as the apocryphal writings, like, you know, in the book of Hanoch, which people were Hanoch. And it was basically for about 275 years, these teachings were not even available to the Israelites of the 12 tribes of Israel. However, came along a king, a direct descendant of King Solomon and King David. His name is Hezekiah or Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And he took the wise men of his generation to look into those writings of his ancestor, King Solomon. And so there was tremendous sanctity found in these three volumes, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs. Hopefully one day we'll cover Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs more in depth. And they went about their studies slowly and deliberately and not hasting to pass a verdict upon these books. Now, Dennis, we know that the Rambam, when he came out with his seminal work, Mishneh Torah and the Guide to the Perplexed, was attacked, and yet today these are two main stable books, not only for the nation of Israel, but more and more people around the world are becoming more aware of the Rambam's teaching. So maybe discuss this idea. When a person writes something, and he or she is, and I mentioned a she as well, it could be a female who is divinely guided, a female prophetess, when they write something that's, you know, way past the current consciousness of the generation, we shouldn't be surprised if the books resurface, you know, at a late, in that case, 275 years, and Rambam's books used to be burned, you know, and then eventually, now that it's one of the most popular, aside from, say, like the Talmud or the Jewish law, it is one of the most popular subjects that is studied amongst the nation of Israel and people around the world, the teachings of Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon. Your take on these matters.
Yes, well, Rambam wrote for the future. He didn't write for the past. He wrote for the future so that you could envision, not necessarily see, but you could perceive or envision what is going on and not be distracted, as Rob said, by the TV and the media and all these other people who are selling you a line of junk, because what they're trying to do is tell you what your mind should be doing. But the Rambam took a different viewpoint. He was known as a direct writer. He didn't beat around the bush. He didn't use subtlety. He just came out and said it on a direct basis. However, this was a shock to a lot of people when he first came out. And it took almost 300 years to catch up to the writings of the Rambam. And that is because he was talking about the future, and people weren't too sure if they were going to jump to his ideas. But his ideas weren't his ideas. They were the ideas of our Creator. And that is what he proposed for people to follow. And he didn't like any sideshows. He didn't like any sidesteps. He wanted to go directly to the heart of the matter. And it took people a long time to realize that he was encompassing everything for the future. And based on that, his teachings still survive today and have meaning and depth for people to follow.
Beautiful, beautiful. Robert, you know, the idea of hiding something and being revealed, and now people around the world, and I want to mention as well for you gentlemen and people listening out in the audience live or hear the eventual archive version, and I also want to be parenthetical stating that when I look at the logistics of who is listening in, gentlemen, and those people listening right now, I'm still quite surprised that our Russian audience, we still have 7.03% of our audience is in Russia. We still have a steady flow of 5.1% from Jamaica. Canada is at 10.9%, and the United States 57.47%. And the United Kingdom is in fifth, but not that's not last place, because there are other countries that are listening. We have less than 1% of our listening audience. We also have Vietnam listening in. We have Belarus. We have Central America. We have South America. So I just want you gentlemen and those of you listening out there that we are aware of, there are people who are tuning in anonymously. They don't call in. That's fine. But we know you're listening, and we want to encourage you to keep on listening. So, Rob, can you address what we've been talking about, how things can be hidden and revealed, and all of a sudden a new treasure is for human consciousness to delve into?
Yes, well, beautiful. In Psalms 91, it talks about the secret place of God, you know, under his wings. And so God can hide anything in plain sight. We know this. You know, sometimes we live in a neighborhood 20 years and we pass a building, we never recognize the building, or we see, or a tree, or something that everyone else seems to acknowledge but us, because our minds are someplace else or our focus is on something else. And so many of God's greatest beauties and treasures on this earth are in plain sight. And that speaks to people, and that's writing and art and literature and all types of different things. And God chooses the right time to make something known. Because it says, you know, thy kingdom come, his will be done, not our will. So he knows when to expose something. He knows when to hold off. And so sometimes, you know, again, man wants everything right now, right now. Show me now. Should give it to me now. And so that's not the case. God doesn't operate that way. He's very methodical. He's not in a rush, you know. He knows when something should be released. It's almost like giving birth. For whatever reason, God made it 9 months. We don't know why. Why is it not 6 months? He made the world in 6 days and rested on seven. Why not a whole year? He does that in some other mammals. So he knows when and why something should be released. The problem is man has no patience because we have a very short life. 120 years is the apex, according to Moses. And most of us live, 70, which is 70, maybe 80, maybe 90, and then we go back. So we're trying to get all we can get in this short period of time. And a great portion of our time is spent learning, from birth to, our college years, if we go to college. So under 30 years old, we're trying to accrue knowledge. And then, 30 to 40, creating a family, 40 to, 40 to 50, trying to build a business. I mean, within all that time. So it's relatively quick, and I'm reminded of something that happened when Jeremiah was in prison, and he was right. He was Baruch was dictating, and I think Baruch was writing something messages, and he gave the sentence to the king, and his servant Djibouti was reading these things, I believe, and the king was cutting these things off and throwing it into the fire as they were being read, and God, what did God have Jeremiah do? Write them again. And he had to do it over and over. So I think a lot of these great men and women of these prophets and great people, it was an arduous task to create these documents and create these writings and get these things. Some of them were destroyed. They had to do it over. Some things were, purposely destroyed or destroyed based on time. But the power, whatever's left, is what God wants revealed. No matter what happens, He will show us. What he wants to be revealed. No matter what happens, no matter who's in office, no matter who the president is, and no matter how many times we are visited with tragedy around the world with mass shootings and killings and anti-Semitism and anti any type of isms, we are going to see the power of God when he's ready to reveal it. So and when it's revealed, it is the precise time. It may be hard for us to understand that because we're suffering in the meantime, but he knows when and why. And if it happens too early, it's premature. So God is never late. That's the point.
All right, look at it this way, Yes, Dennis.
We must grow with God. We don't accept God when we're very young, but it takes almost a lifetime to grow with God and to grow with his ideas. What people have written years and years ago, sometimes you pick it up at different points in life, and you may reject it. Or you don't like it. That doesn't mean you don't grow with God, but there's so much that is written. There's something for you, and God is there. So it takes a lifetime to be patient and understand, but don't waste your time on earth not growing with God.
Amen. That's a wonderful blessing and insight, Dennis. I thank you for sharing that. And that's one of the things that I share. I'm mentoring someone right now. In my congregation in Crown Heights, the famous Frankel Shul, his name is Michal Harrison, and he's already gone through halfway towards his conversion. And I said that I see, even amongst my own people, my own culture, when people lose enthusiasm for growth, they become spiritually, and I don't want to point fingers at any one person because I have to be careful I don't get into this realm as well, they become spiritually stale. And when something becomes stale, it becomes moldy. When something becomes moldy, you want to discard it. And when you want to discard something, especially something which is supposed to be your faith and your national identification, it's indicative of lack of processing and internalizing the knowledge and also a lack of self-esteem. Of course, there could be other factors too. A person could be raised in a pristine spiritual environment, whether it be Jew, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, whatever, but someone, a practitioner of one of those faiths, could have done something to him or her that traumatizes them, that they'll scapegoat the very spirituality which can nurture them from this world until the future world. Robert, your take on these matters?
Well, wow, that's deep. I mean, I think this is present in the current church. I was going to a church for several years, and I decided not to go anymore. And people said, wow, you were really involved. Well, I didn't go to church to praise the preacher. I didn't go to church to join a club. I went to church to gain a deeper understanding of God and my connection, what I should do, what I should not do, and draw nearer to him. And when it became a time when I felt I wasn't learning anything, and when I felt like it was more of theatrics and more of, you know, socializing, which is what a lot of, you know, religious institutions have become, because the world has intervened. Man has become more social and less spiritual. And so, but they don't believe that they are, because it becomes so commonplace. And so even in the temples and in the synagogues, or whether it be the sanctuaries, the zeal is diminished, because they're not getting what they want in a material sense either. And that is a lot of reason why men and women walk away from the church. It's not because they don't love God, but the idea of what God represents to them is not clear. They think God is an ATM. They think God is the guy who's going to show up at Bloomingdale's and buy them a Gucci bag. So it's when these, or, you know, I didn't get the house, God, I prayed earnestly for this house and didn't get this house. Or, you know, or even when a loved one is sick and God decides that loved one is better coming home than staying here. And they think, well, you know, God didn't answer my prayer. Well, the fact that you can hear him, the fact that he's available for you to speak to, means that the prayer has already been answered. And some of it is just laziness, because the world is very powerful. It's very, very powerful. I mean, as a father raising, you know, five kids, I realized, you know, they come from one womb, but they have different ideas. And when I say it hits them all differently. And some get it the first time, some 5 years later. Some are stubborn. They get it when they feel like it, you know. It doesn't mean they didn't hear it, but it just means that, you know, maybe God is dealing with them that way. But just back to your point about becoming stale, it's like, if God is not first, then the world is going to be first. You have to make it. You have to draw a line, a definitive line, to saying what's first. It's either God or the world. And if you don't put him first place, other things will creep in, and then your desire to learn, your desire to see, your desire to hear him, it diminishes, because it's like, well, he's an afterthought. And whenever that's the case, that you are doomed to face tribulation. So I think that's kind of what we're confronted with in teaching Torah, teaching the Bible, teaching anything of value, even in the greatest colleges. People go, oh, I went to Harvard, I went to Yale. Yeah, I mean, you got your degree, you know, but are you still excited about it now? You're out in the world. You're married 15 years. Are you still excited about your wife? When you first met her, you took her, you know, you gave her all these nice things. You complimented her. We have to maintain, and this is what I want to say before I jump off. It has to be a conscious effort. It has to be, you have to think about it. You have to want it. And you have to know that when there's resistance and it feels like you don't want to do it, that's when you kick in the overdrive and go, no, this is going to happen. I'm married 21 years. I don't know how many years you're married, Don, but I'm 21 years. There's some days when the dinner doesn't taste so great. There's some days when she doesn't put in the – sometimes the thing that I love the most, I didn't like the next – you know, the tea didn't taste as sweet the day before, you know, as it was yesterday. And that's when I go, but this is a person that I'm committed to. And I made a promise to God that I would serve, whether the dinner was – whether she burnt the food or, you know, or and vice versa. Maybe I'm not always attractive as I was the day before. Maybe I say something that is just not right or do something that's wrong. And then, you know, so you have – it's a conscious effort to be – powerful in that way, and if you take your foot off the gas, the car will definitely slow down.
Beautiful. Before we go further, I wanted to bring this up, Robin. I'm sure Dennis want to comment. You recently got a copy of the Gate of Trust by Rabbi Bechaya, and you met a Jewish man on the street. Can you talk about that conversation you had about him and how he reacted when you told him that you got this book, The Gate of Trust?
Yeah.
I think it's a very fascinating story. And I'm looking forward to how Dennis reacts to it as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, a good friend of mine who remained nameless gave me, a Jewish man. He gave me a copy of this book, and he said, "I want you to have this book. I want you to, you know, take a look at it." And I was leaving my office, and as I was crossing the street, there was a Jewish man waiting for the light to change, and, you know, we said hello. You know, he was in his car, and I showed him the book. I just kind of held up the book, and, you know, just, you know, hey, look at this, you know. And then he pulled over to the side of the road, and he goes, you know, where'd you get that book? And I go, I said, a good friend gave it to me. And he says, that's a really good book. He must think highly of you. He must really like you. And I go, really? He said, yeah. He said, if you follow that book, you know, things will work out wonderfully for you. And then, you know, we for 15 minutes, this guy was like blocking traffic. His cars had to go around him. And he's talking about an experience he had, you know, in reading this book and how he applied to his life. He's into real estate. And he wanted to buy this house. And I think the house was $700,000. But all he had was, I think, he said $630,000. I don't know much about real estate, so just kind of follow me here. And then he went to his brother-in-law, who said, "I'll give you the rest of the money, but let's get this house appraised again," or something like that. And when it was appraised again, the value of the house came down to the amount that he had, and he had to wait. So he didn't even need the money from his brother-in-law, and his wife was worried that they wouldn't get the place and whatever happened. But he said it was his patience and his trust in God that he said, "This is what I have. I know God's going to make use of what I have." He had faith and patience, and it worked out in his favor, and he was able to get that piece of property. And he made it clear that the teaching in this book was part of what was instilled in him to wait on God and trust in God. So it was amazing. And I mean, this guy, and we didn't know each other before this day. He actually took my number and he said, "Let's keep in contact," because he wanted to hear more about, wow, you know, my journey in reading the book. Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful. Dennis, any take on this interaction that Robert
yes.
experienced?
What happens is we are imperfect humans. And because of that, when we learn or read things when we're young, we sometimes accept part of it, sometimes all of it. But it is in our power to revisit these things. And as we get older, we could have a different viewpoint, a different perception. So what didn't appear to us when we were 20, we could have meaning when we're 40 years old and read or understand the same thing. So what happens,
yes,
we have the power to revisit these things and to mm-hmm. reinforce the trust that we're looking for. And it does not hurt to read an old book, an old writing, an old scripture, to see if you can't get something out of it. There's something in it for everybody, usually, but as we get older, we appreciate these things. We don't appreciate them when we're younger because we're itchy and we want to jump and we want to quickly get things out of the way. But as we mature, we understand. So the old writings haven't changed, and they are not new writings, but we may have missed some ideas that we didn't catch or understand when we first visited them.
Sure. Beautiful, Dennis. I just want to mention before we start to dive into the first verses of chapter 1 of Mishlei of Proverbs, is that there are laws of nature. And unfortunately, people associate laws of nature of just as, you know, how fast can a cheetah run, how much water comes down per hour from Niagara Falls. But there are laws of nature in terms of human conduct and human consciousness and the transmitting of that awareness and consciousness. So I just want to point out that King Solomon ruled in Israel for 40 years. And what some people are aware of, maybe some are, some aren't, is that he started his reign even before his bar mitzvah. He usually takes place at 13. He was 12 years old. And he reigned until he was 52 years old. He was the son of King David, and he was known to follow in the ways of his father's piety. And he's mentioned here at the beginning of verse 1, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel." And with this being said, this is to let us know that the fact that he was the king of Israel, meaning he had a special connection to God. And these writings, which were put to the side and eventually resurrected through his descendant, Hezekiah, the King Hezekiah, or we say in Hebrew, Melech Chizkiyahu, bring out many things. And King Solomon wants us to know in verse 2, chapter 1, to know wisdom and discipline to comprehend words of understanding. So what is this wisdom? So in this context, there was a very famous scholar from a couple hundred years ago, and then after I bring out these commentaries, we'll turn to Dennis and then Rob, is that wisdom from a Torah biblical perspective is to divide the methods to avoid being trapped by one's evil inclination.
Hmm.
Now, discipline is the methods, but the discipline is the implementation of those methods, especially when a person sees that their evil inclination is building up momentum. And comprehending words of understanding, if one can develop a system called wisdom, methodology, and discipline to implement it, then one is gaining understanding. Now, it will help to learn the scripture, and we also see that there's the oral Torah tradition. But we see here that, you know, wisdom, discipline, and comprehending words of understanding is not talking about becoming a soldier in the army, because, you know, you could say you, all these things you talk about, well, you'll be a great soldier. But in a sense, you are being a soldier, but you're a soldier for God without brandishing the weapons of war. The weapons of war are basically how to conquer ourselves. And this is brought down in many different faiths. Mein Kampf was written by the evil Hitler. And there's a jihad, which is an Islamic, Muslim, the idea of the conflict within oneself. So, Dennis, why is it that so many people are looking at wisdom and discipline, understanding, just, you know, the practical aspect of making a book or just, you know, being the big guy on the street? Why are humans so disconnected from this inner struggle that all of us are engaging in, whether we like it or not?
Well, to begin with, we're not born with wisdom. Wisdom comes with understanding, and understanding comes with age. So you cannot expect someone who's 5 or even 10 years old to have a lot of wisdom. But somebody who's been on the planet for 25, 35, 45 years, we expect them to show some understanding as to why they're here. Why are they a child of God? Why are they practicing their religion, whatever it is? But we expect those people to have some understanding. And you will only get that with knowledge. And you must be able to absorb a certain amount of knowledge and convert it into good ideas, which we call wisdom, and understanding. And it must be not just surface understanding. It must be deep understanding. And the understanding is why we are here on earth. Where is God? What is our relationship to God? That does not go away. But if you don't have some wisdom, if you've been on this planet for so long, then you are wandering and lost. So we all look for answers. Answers come from wisdom. And the answers are very important. But we're on a quest when we're born to seek those answers. And some people will find it after maybe 10, 20 years. Some people 40, 50 years. But they're there. If you look, you will see them, not with your eyes, but you will perceive them with your mind. And if your mind understands, you are on the right track.
Dennis, that was wonderful. Rob, your take on these matters.
Well, I'm going to debate Dennis slightly on this a bit, and we're going to talk about wisdom coming through age. I'm going to have to disagree respectfully only because I think wisdom is something you must seek. In Proverbs, it talks about if you receive, so it must be, again, I go back to that intentional desire to seek God. God is available. You know, Bible says if he's knocking, if you open the door, he'll come in and sup with you. So we have a responsibility to seek and invite the Holy Spirit and invite the Spirit of God and make it and prepare a place where God can come in and deal with us. People are living in the world, and they're doing pretty much whatever they want to do, and they have no wisdom, and they say, oh, God, why don't I have? And the Bible says, you have not because you ask not. In Hosea, it says, my people perish for a lack of knowledge. So it's not that it's not available. It's because they don't want it. They want other things, and they think that material things and worldly gain are the best ways to find comfort till they realize there are no peace in material things. This is idol worshiping and things of that nature. the car, the house, the, you know, whatever it may be, a vacation. I mean, and not that, you know, God didn't set these things in place that we should have some enjoyment. Knowledge, you know, in the book of James, it says, you know, if you ask God, he gives you the, you know, in wisdom, he gives it liberally to those who ask. So if you don't ask, you don't get. A closed mouth doesn't get fed. You know, a mind that doesn't seek God and pray for these things won't find the peace. Solomon asked God for this wisdom. He asked, and God said, because you didn't ask for long life or, you know, or money, I'm going to grant you this thing. Now, Solomon got all the wisdom more than any man would ever get, and he still, you know, made. So even along with what you're asking for, there are some pitfalls in knowing a lot. Because here's the game. If you're around people who don't know what you know and around a bunch of other people who don't want to know, and here you are, a person with all of this power, and there's no one to lead because people don't want it, it leads to conflict. There's something I want to share with you before we move on. I just want to look at this part of Proverbs, since we're in Proverbs. And this is, people say, God, if God is love. In Proverbs 6:16, it says, these six things the Lord hates indeed. Seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, the spirit that makes one overestimate himself and underestimate others, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that manufactures wicked thoughts and plans. We talked about those wicked thoughts. Feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies under oath, and he who sows discord amongst his brethren. So the idea that God doesn't have things that he really detests and he really doesn't like. So if you don't seek wisdom, if you don't seek knowledge, he gives it liberally, but you have to come for it. You're just not going to sit back and do whatever you want to do, and it just kind of falls into your lap. With age, yes, we should be 50, 60, 70 with an abundance of wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Unfortunately, if we look at the world at large, can we say that's true? Look at people in power. You know, I don't want to call any particular name because people have their own religious and, political affiliations, and it's neither here nor there. But just look at who's in control and look at the things that they say and do. Are they wise men? Are they wise women? A man that says, I hate the Jews, I hate the blacks, I hate the Asians, I hate, or marginalized people, or tell people what they deserve based on the color of their skin or where they live or what they believe in. So age, and remember now, the world is being run by older people, people that are 60, 70 plus. So it's not the youth that's destroying the world, it's the people that are older. So where is the wisdom? And if in fact it comes through time and age, then we're in a lot of trouble. We got to recalibrate, because we often blame young people for what the condition of the world. And remember, we're leading them. They were born into it. So if they're 15, 16, 20, then that means we failed in some type of way of leading them. Or we overexposed them to things that were not fruitful. And then in effect, blame them when things go wrong. But remember, we're 30, 40 years beyond them. So how is this possible? That's just a thought.
That's very, very interesting. Dennis, you'd like to respond before we move on to the next verse?
Sure. We're not disagreeing, Rob, at all, because all humans have free will. Free will says, are you going to accept this knowledge or not? Are you going to accept this understanding or not? A lot of people will hear the truth, but they don't recognize it as the word of God. They refuse to accept it. However, will life change that as they stay longer on the earth? So you may reject it when you're a teenager, saying, oh, it has no meaning for me. Yeah, that's okay. That's the human viewpoint. However, we expect as you get older, you will gain more knowledge and understanding. And out of that comes wisdom. So it's a question of acceptance. You can listen, you can hear, but if your mind doesn't accept, do you really understand? Will you really be in a position to talk about wisdom? Because it doesn't come in a book. It comes in a whole library. And that doesn't mean you have to read every book in the library, but you must have understanding. Understanding doesn't come in one book. You must read many different viewpoints and accept what you believe is the right way to go.
Beautiful.
Well, Dennis, I'm going to say this. Before we move on, you know, we look at the House of, you know, every 4 years we have an election for the president. We have midterm elections, whatever. We have different elections throughout the year, 2 years, whatever. And we have people that have been sitting in the Senate and the Congress for 30 years, 40 years. And these people have many years of judicial law and legislative law.
That doesn't mean
all kinds of different. Right. Now, the thing is that are we being led by godly people? Are we being led by people with a desire to please God and please people or please themselves? And so, you know, the world is in turmoil. So, here we are, a handful of people, you know, 500 people leading millions of people. And I ask myself all the time, if we are a wise group of people, we are a wise nation, supposedly, you know, and some of us have great, you know, institutional education, some of us are theologians, we have millions of churches and synagogues around the world. If this be the case, why is there so much tumult with all of these amazing minds available and all this wisdom and knowledge available? And here we are aging out of life, you know, at least physical life, and you know, going back to a spiritual life. Why, if this be the case, why is there so much tumult? Why is there so much discord? Why is there so much hate? Why is there so much evil? You would think by now that we would be in a place that we would have some type of connection, some type of divine connection as human race. Now, don't mistake what I'm saying to mean that we're in complete chaos and out of order. We're not, because there are 8 billion people on the planet. So if we were really, you know, in a bad spot, we wouldn't be able to walk out of the house. So, I mean, there's some level of control happening here, but not to the end where I think we should be much further ahead in some respect. And I think that we definitely have a lot more to do to get to where we need to be. And those who are considered to be leaders are not really leaders at all. And that's just truth. And I know, like I said, if people are hungry, leadership is bad. If gas prices are $6 a gallon, I'm not putting it on one president or two presidents. I'm putting it on the body of people in control. If people are homeless, if people are mentally disabled and can't find good care, if you are deciding who should get the care of another person, if one person's color, you know, allows him or her to get coverage or whatever they need over another person because of whatever it might be, that's not wise. What wise is that everybody eats and drinks and is being treated fairly in a way that we can all live comfortably. It doesn't mean everybody has to be rich. The rich is good health and peace of mind is riches. And so that wisdom is just, I don't know if we're in a place where our governing body and our leadership, and not just the political realm, but in the theological realm, is on the right page. I think we have some work to do, and those are my thoughts. So,
I just want to comment. Well, I think in all before you comment, I just want to respond that I think in all of the areas you mentioned, in terms of people assuming leadership, there's a needing for an upgrading in every position. I'll just leave it at that. That people should go from strength to strength. Yes, Dennis, your take on these matters.
There's a historical fact of a letter written by the Rambam to the congregation in Yemen. And that was based on the fact that they were asking for guidance, which was wisdom to a certain extent, that also included understanding. And what he did in the letter, he explained what God expects of us and what we expect of our leaders. So he stripped the problem down to its bare essentials and said the guy was false. He was a fraud. He could not replace God in any way, shape, or form. But you don't follow those people that are leaders, but they're misleading. So he straightened out the people for better understanding in Yemen who are in this particular congregation. But we don't have that happening in too many places. You mentioned we have a presidential vote every 4 years. But where is the wisdom if we redo things without understanding or the benefit of time going by? So you would think that as we would elect better leaders as time goes by. but somehow we don't. So we miss understanding, and we're losing a lot of wisdom because we don't understand.
Very nice, Dennis. Very nice. Gentlemen, I'd like to move on to verse 3, where King Solomon teaches in chapter 1, verse 3, to receive the discipline of wisdom, righteousness, justice, and equity. Now, this precedes, this verse precedes who he's intending his instructions to go to. Because, remember, he had inherited the kingship from his father David, King David. King David was 70 when King Solomon inherited the kingship at the age of 12 years old. So, you know, one of the things that intimidated, from what I've seen in the oral Torah traditions, is that he basically saying, the elders of Israel, here I'm a boy, 12 years old, I'm not even bar mitzvah yet, and I'm going to be issuing decrees and wisdoms and sharing, and people 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, people up to 120 years old, how are they going to listen to me? So he basically here is calling out for a four-point plan that hopefully every person at their own level could relate to. There's wisdom, again, which talked about methodology, but also here, as the Gra comments, wisdom has to be acquired in the proper sequence, meaning you can't teach a five-year-old child who's eventually going to become a PhD in theoretical physics or quantum physics. You can't teach them E equals MC squared. I mean, maybe one prodigy, you know, phenom, one out of 1 billion people could you do that. But you have to start with them the most simplest arithmetic, one, I mean, the symbol for one, and the plus sign, the symbol sign of plus, and then the symbol sign of one, and then the symbol sign for equals two. Because if you start a child, a young person, or a there are many adults who are young in terms of their overall spiritual consciousness, you have to take them in a certain order. Because if there's not a synchronization of how to deliver the wisdom to the recipient of that wisdom, they'll become confused, and eventually they can actually not only deny that wisdom, but ultimately the wisdom is about getting developing fundamental faith and trust in the Almighty. It can undermine any developing consciousness of the fundamentals of truth. Now, righteousness here is the second point of this four-point plan, which is charity. Now, people look at charity in different ways. But from the Torah perspective, the word for charity is tzedakah, which relates to the idea of tzedek, righteousness. We should not underestimate the giving of a nickel, penny, quarter, dime, or spiritual charity, tzedakah ruchni, by encouraging another person. And I do believe that these conversations, gentlemen, are in that category because we're trying to get people to realize you have to be giving. Justice, the third point of this four-point plan by young King Solomon, means to judge honestly. We have to be patient when we're not because we're not talking about people who are, you know, judges on the civil and federal and state level. We're talking about we all have to be judgmental, but and hopefully in a positive way, and in a way that's honest in terms of our relations with other human beings. And the last is equity, which is a big term of discussion, a matter of, it's become a very controversial issue, equity versus, you know, merit-based development. But equity, according to the Torah, according to Rashi, one of the foremost commentators in the oral Torah tradition, you know, expanding, widening out, tethering out the inner dimension of equity as it understand as it applies to a Torah teaching, is to make it a straight road, equal to this one and equal to that one. So there is room for equity for those who don't like the idea of an equity-based society. From the Torah itself, there is basis for it. Robert, your take on these matters.
You said a lot, and as we're sitting here, in a climate where they're repealing, the Supreme Court repealed something recently with Roe versus Wade, and now they're looking at, you know, someone said they're looking at Ferguson versus the Board of Education, I believe, and things of that nature. I hate to use the word man of color, because I think everyone is a person of color. You know, we laugh about these things, but, you know, white is a color, black is a color, color is a color. I mean, you know, you just want to, you know, but the point I'm trying to make is that when you talk about equality, you can't have equality without equity. It is impossible. The man says, you know, you guys are free. We just celebrated Juneteenth. And it says, well, you're free to go, slaves. You're free to go. Free to go do what exactly?
I don't have any money. I don't own anything. You put me back and you freed me into the hands of the people who oppressed me. And so how is it that we talk about, advancing as a society when it's clearly an imbalance in equity, financial resources, and things of that nature? I didn't forget your question. I'm coming to it. I just think that a lot of times, the misusage of words, there are people that are wordsmiths. They're so skilled at bending and twisting. They're like magicians when it comes to the Torah. They're magicians when it comes to the Bible. They're magicians when it comes to Webster's unabridged version of the dictionary and the laws and the Constitution. People say, I want my constitutional rights. But if you ask 50 people what the Constitution was from one to the end, they wouldn't be able to tell you. They know gun rights. They know freedom of speech. They know about two or three different things they can pull out. But they don't know the depth of what they're saying that they want. And so you talk about charity. And it's not just all financial charity. It is also to give from a place. And charity should be instinctual. It should not be thoughtful. Meaning that when I say it is a thoughtful act, but it should flow from you so easily because of your trust in God. We go back to trust in the beginning of the conversation, this book, Gate of Trust. It's trusting God beyond what you can see. It's trusting God without any possible inclination to doubt him. It is just pure, unadulterated, steadfast trust. And that type of trust shows your real, true passion, zeal, and love of God. And when you're aligned with God that way, when you're aligned with the Creator, and this is what I wanted to come to, is that when we're out of alignment as individuals and a society, all of the other things fall apart. All of the other things have no power if you're not aligned. It's like, again, going back to being married. If you're married and you and your wife are not aligned, the house divided against itself will not stand. You're two people looking in two different directions. You're pulling and pushing and pulling and pushing, so nothing ever happens because you're not on the same page. As a society, there can be no compassion when we're out of alignment. There can be no equity when we're out of alignment. There can be no anything. Everything, when they talked about the day of Pentecost in the Bible and everyone was on one accord and then the Holy Spirit came in like a mighty rushing wind, everyone was on one accord. Now, if we're not even to the Tower of Babel, when people they were building this tower, and they said, let us build this thing, let's build a city and a tower up to heaven. And they actually completed it. And God said, I had to knock this down because there'll be nothing impossible for them because they were what? On one accord. And it means even if you're an atheist or an agnostic or you don't believe in anything, but if you follow certain principles and you're on one accord, you can bring it to light. It's a fact. So, I think for some reason, there are more people that are not as spiritually sound and grounded that accomplished evil goals because they work on one accord. And the people who have the understanding of the principles are not on one accord. So we're losing ground and power to people that are just following the principles but don't have the spiritual discernment or concern for it. But it still works for them to do what they want to do. But for destructive reasons. And so we have to come to a place where we do things because it's the right thing to do and it should flow from us naturally. A tree bears leaves every single year naturally. Nature is the greatest representation of how man should behave. It just does what it needs to do. If you look at lions or tigers, they don't kill because they kill to eat, they kill to protect. They're not just running around and a lion is not just not showing off, I'm the king of the jungle. It does what it needs to do to protect its family. And everything in nature is methodical. But man, Dennis mentioned that man has free will. It may be to a fault that we have free will, but we use it in a destructive capacity instead of growth capacity. And that is what is troubling. So that's my take on it.
Okay. I just want to mention, gentlemen, we're coming to the program, so I'm going to let Dennis chime in one more time. So, Rob, how can individuals listening live or the archive version connect to you to learn more about your wonderful endeavors in graphic arts or on YouTube or other ways of contacting you?
I mean, you can reach out to me if you want to have a conversation or share with me. My email address is robwalkerbrooklyn@gmail.com. That's robwalkerbrooklyn@gmail.com. On Instagram, I'm Rob Walker Studio on Instagram, and you can see some of my work. I'm redesigning my website,
I'm about to release two more children's books and a few other pieces of art that you're going to really love called Mindful. And when you go to my Instagram page, you'll get a sneak preview of what that looks like. But anyone can reach out at any time. Feel free. If you want to do a collaboration or have me speak somewhere, please reach out. Feel free. God bless you all. And that's all I got to say about that, Don.
Thank you, Robert. Dennis, your final word, your comments on what Robert brought to the table of discussion and any other words you'd like to...
I like this concept of freedom. You can have freedom, but if there's no availability, what are you free of? But the other part is equality and width implies the sameness. However, God all gave us fingers and hands, but he gave us different fingerprints. Can we ever say we're going to be equal if there's no differences? Unfortunately, humans haven't figured it out. So equality is a state of mind, and we don't know how to apply it because every time we look at something, we see a difference. How are we ever going to reach equality if we're always emphasizing the difference?
Beautiful.
God bless.
We really more have similarities and differences, everyone out there listening. And I want to thank you, gentlemen. This was a very, very potent and fertile discussion in a pleasant and peaceful manner. And I hope that we will continue in the next couple of weeks. I think this is the way to go. King Solomon's, we've only gone through three verses. And look at the rich dialogue that we brought out that to go around the world. I just want to remind everyone that we are in a time where your prayers are needed. Don't underestimate the power of your thought. Don't underestimate the power of your speech. Don't underestimate the power of your tzedakah, your righteous acts, or your charity, if you want to call it that, because you have a divine image that will help you get in scrimmage, hopefully in a way of a havachad, one love, goral achad, one destiny, kulanu, all of us. But darkam narku shalom, we're going to conclude today's humble presentation by young Ari Lesser, who every time I hear one of his songs, I'm hearing more, not lesser. This is a song about life. I've played it before, I'm going to play it again, because it's an affirmation of life, and that the fact that we have life is something we should have gratitude towards the Creator and extend that gratitude to everyone else. This is your local international cyberspace Torah activist, Toskan Dunjus Goodman, wishing everyone a blessed week. Until we reconvene, let's be kind and not mean. Take care, everyone.
Focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens. And what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man. And remember, always live your life the best that you can. Focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens. And what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man. And remember, always live your life the best that you can. When the training skies are gray and you're feeling bad, think for a minute about what's making you sad. You might be short of money, but what's that really worth? All the money in the world couldn't buy you birth. In a race of millions, you're the only sperm that scored. You passed the hardest test already, life was your reward. Stop feeling down and start having a ball, cause being alive is the greatest gift of all. You can sing, you can dance, you can eat, you can drink, run, jump, learn, sleep, walk, talk, or think. So cheer up, smile, laugh away your sorrow. Today it might be raining, but the sun will shine tomorrow. And focus on what's there, not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens. And what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man. And remember, always live your life the best that you can. Focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens. And what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man. And remember, always live your life the best that you can.
you're alive. Who cares if it's cold or hot? Just try and be grateful for all that you got. Thank God you have food, cause some people don't. Thank God you're getting educated, some people won't. Thank God you can see, some people are blind. And thank God for all the friends that you find. Thank God for Shabbat, snap the daily grind. Thank God you can sleep each night and rest your mind. Thank God for the books of motion, 1, 2, 5. But most of all, thank God you're alive. And focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens. And what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman and love your fellow man. And remember, always live your life the best that you can. Focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens. And what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man. And remember, always live your life the best that you can.